Welcome to the 393rd edition of Travelitch Radio, brought to you tonight by the best holiday gift of the year, my book, The New Baseball Bible, Notes, Nuggets, Lists, and Legends from Our National Pastime. 480 pages for a sawbuck, such a deal.
Here at Travelitch Radio, we also cover all the bases. We talk to hoteliers, destinations, authors, writers, entrepreneurs, and tour operators. Everyone connected to the world of travel, and try to cover not only the USA, but interesting, unusual places, people, and events around the world.
And sometimes we go beyond the world we know. Tonight, we conclude our 2020 season and our ninth season overall with the second half of our series, 2020, A Space Odyssey. And we're honored to have astronomer Roy Alexander of Astro Ventures as our guest, calling in from Great Britain, where it's 1 o'clock in the morning. Welcome, Roy, to Travelitch Radio.
Hello there, Dan. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for setting your alarm and waking up to do our show. Last week, we talked with Val Stimack, author of Dark Skies, A Practical Guide to Astrotourism. She's a travel journalist raised in Alaska with curiosity about the starry skies above. Didn't you also start as a kid when you got a telescope as a birthday present from your grandfather?
Yeah, that's right. I was 9 years old. It's one of my actual earliest memories as a child. And the telescope, I still have it. It still works. It's a tiny little thing, 1 inch diameter. And I remember as a 9 year old seeing the moon through it, the seven sisters. And one of the things my granddad showed me was how you can use a telescope to project sunspots onto a piece of paper and safely observe sunspots. So some of my earliest vivid memories are of that.
Well, since city lights invariably interfere with even amateur astronomers, where did you live as a boy? How did you become so hooked on astronomy that you actually studied it and got college degrees in geophysics and planetary physics? I know you later became a teacher. Is it correct to call you a professor of astronomy?
Marianne, I wouldn't go that far. in England, to be a professor, you have to be kind of appointed in its university post and so on. I've been a physics teacher for 25 years. And I grew up as a kid on the coast in, I don't know if you know the United Kingdom at all, but I grew up on the southeast coast. And I was quite lucky that although I lived in a town, I could walk down to the beach usually with the dog, take the dog for a walk over night time, and just sit on the beach. And then it would be dark enough to see the stars and to see the Milky Way. And it was just amazing. So that's what got me into kind of astronomy and science. And actually, when I was younger, I really wanted to be an astronaut, but didn't quite get there. And I wanted to do a degree in astrophysics. Couldn't do the maths. The maths was really hard. So the planetary physics degree I got was a good kind of like a way of getting that qualification. And there was quite a lot of astronomy in there, so I was quite lucky in that regard.
That's great. You had several ventures in technology and even won several patents for your inventions. What were those?
Oh, God, nothing very exciting, I'm afraid. So I have a couple of patents based around a type of screen technology that when we were developing it was basically just like a nano imprinted plastic that you could use to project images on really, really well. And it was at the time it was better than anything even the large corporations like 3M had. But then it didn't ever work because somebody invented blue LEDs. Back then you only had, if you wanted your screens to work, you didn't have blue LEDs, and someone invented blue LEDs, and it made technology of screens, TV screens, computer screens, large billboards cheaper and better and more colorful, and that entirely basically made our invention completely redundant. But the entire process of coming up with ideas, getting money from the government to help you develop that and so on was fantastic, and actually helped me later in life. It's helped me now to get money for funding for some of the education projects that we do with Astro Ventures. So very useful experience.
That's terrific. We're talking with Roy Alexander of Astro Ventures.
Roy, tell us about your first visit to an observatory. Is it true that you were so enchanted that you volunteered to help out and got the keys to the kingdom?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was massively into astronomy as a kid, as we know. That got me into science. I mean, literally, my granddad giving me that telescope got me into the degree that I really wanted to do. And then, you know, many, many years later, living where I do in the other end of England, in the north of England, near the border of Scotland, where the skies are incredibly dark, there was a very, and there is still now, a very famous observatory called Kielder Observatory. And around about 2012, I went up there as a guest, actually, and I went up two or three nights in the course of a month. And it was amazing. I loved the place. I loved the people that worked there. And I asked if I could help. And within a couple of weeks, I was making cups of tea for guests and, you know, helping people and using the telescopes and helping the general public to observe the skies. And then a month or two after that, I was doing talks and delivering some of the sessions. And then a month or so after that, I got the keys to the place. I mean, that was just amazing. And it's such a remote place that, you know, generally what we would do is we would deliver a night of astronomy to the general public. And then rather than drive home, it would take me 2 hours to drive home, especially in the winter. You don't want to be doing that with all the snow on the ground. We would just get our sleeping bags out and, you know, sleep on the floor of the observatory and then get up in the morning. And, you know, you wake up and you're in the middle of this beautiful forest in Northumberland in this wonderful old it's old now, but at the time, kind of brand new astronomy building. And if the moon was up, you'd watch the moon rise, use the telescopes yourself. Absolutely wonderful time for me.
Oh, sounds heavenly.
Didn't you also host various events, such as organizing groups to watch meteor showers?
Yeah, well, I mean, that was part of the job, really, if you can call it a job. Getting to do something like that and to be paid for it for a living is amazing. And one of the meteor showers was the Geminids, which is coming up, actually. The Geminids is coming up soon. Basically, it's such a prolific meteor shower. You can see, you know, a couple hundred shooting stars on a night time. So very lucky to be able to host evenings covering that kind of subject matter. The Aurora Borealis. One of my favorite things to do is astronomy for absolute beginners, you know, just really trying to get people into it.
So how, why, and when did you start AstroVentures, and what exactly does it offer the public?
Well, whilst I was working at Kielder, what I realized was that we weren't at the time really doing very much in schools. And with my background as a teacher, having worked in some inner city schools up in the north, I'd seen kind of some real kind of poverty, and there, we have children who live, you know, literally a half hour's drive from the beach, a half hour's drive from the national park, and yet none of them had ever had the opportunity to do that. So I wanted to set something up that enabled me to deliver astronomy and do that, you know, as a career, but also that would be kind of part charitable, part not for profit, that would allow us to somehow get, you know, children to really enjoy the dark skies, perhaps these inner city children. So that's what AstroVentures is. In this country, we have this, that you can set up something called a social enterprise, which it isn't quite a company. It's not quite a business. It is a business, but it also isn't quite a charity. It's kind of half and half. So that's what I set that up to do primarily. And actually, we've been set up for 5 or 6 years now, and we've delivered quite a lot of free events to, you know, Cub Scouts, Girl Guides, all that, those kind of children's groups. We've done some stuff in schools as well. We mentor children and help them kind of develop their STEM, science, technology, engineering, and maths STEM. Now, what we'll do on the commercial side is we deliver astronomy events and experiences to the general public in various places around the national park. So you're talking about hotels, campsites. Do you have glamping in America? It's, you know, where camp, but they camp in very posh like tents, yurts, and things like that. So we deliver that on the commercial side. We help people to enjoy the sky, the beautiful dark skies that we have. And then from a charitable point of view, we do what we can with education. And this year was going to be the big year for that, but then, of course, COVID came along and schools and everything's changed a little bit. So we really are trying to think about what AstroVentures delivers at the minute and moving forward, you know, what that means for us.
Mm-hmm. You must have been honored and thrilled at the same time when you were asked to design, build, and manage the Battelsteads Observatory. Could you tell us about that?
Well, yeah. So when I first set up AstroVentures, and I was kind of introducing myself around Northumberland and talking to the various hotels and so on there, I got introduced to a chap called Richard Slade, and him and his wife Dee Slade, they own the Battelsteads Observatory. They own both. But at the time, it was just the hotel and the restaurant. When I met them, they were award-winning, the number one kind of green and eco-tourist-friendly hotel in the UK, constantly winning these kinds of awards. And I got introduced to them because I heard they wanted to do some astronomy stuff. So I literally, that same day that I heard about that, I drove to the hotel, introduced myself, met Richard. We had lunch. We sat out in the garden because it was a summer's day. He got the plans out for the observatory he had already drawn up. And straight away there and then, I offered some help and advice on how to improve that design as it was. And within a week, we had a couple of different conversations. I spoke to his architect. And that was it, really. That was what got me interested in working with him interested in working with me. We changed the designs of the observatory. We made it bigger to accommodate more people. He spent more money on it. He really kind of invested in my idea. And I helped him build and grow this visitor attraction that we now have, for the general public. And it's amazing. It's like a dream come true, really, for me. I basically took my experiences from Kielder Observatory, took all the positive experiences from that, developed a whole load of kind of inclement weather, bad weather kind of presentations and activities. The rumors you hear about the UK raining a lot, that is true. It does rain a lot here. So we've come at it from the point of view as when we get people in and we're entertaining them, which is that's what we are. We're entertaining them with science. We assume it's going to be cloudy or rainy, and we keep fingers crossed for good weather. Anyway, we get clear skies more than half of the time, so it works really, really well. And then over the course of the last few years, I've built up a small team of very professional, wonderful, engaging people around me who now help me deliver events there and in schools and around the region. So it's been an absolute dream come true.
Oh, it sounds it. We're talking with Roy Alexander of AstroVentures.
And Roy, is it fair to say Battelsteads is a visitor center observatory totally dedicated to entertaining and educating the public about astronomy as well as astrophotography?
No, absolutely, Dan. We are not in any way kind of like a technical academic observatory. We don't do any research. We're there specifically so that members of the public can use equipment worth thousands and thousands of pounds, and we have a collection of meteorites as well that basically you wouldn't see, anywhere outside of a museum. And it's basically so that normal members of the public who might have a fleeting, amateur or semi-amateur interest in astronomy, or even be absolute newbies, can just come along. They can have a really nice dinner at the restaurant or a drink. They can come up to the observatory and just have fun. Because we live in a day and age where really basically, everything's on TripAdvisor. If you want to go and do something, you look on TripAdvisor to find out where you can go and the things that you can do. You then, from our point of view, we're looking to give our guests a 4 or 5 star experience, and it's very much about them having fun and kind of learning as well at the time. They're learning a little bit by stealth. They go away having enjoyed themselves, thinking, oh, I know a bit more now.
Can you tell us about some of the events you run for Battelsteads?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So generally around about this time of year, we start to think about people who are going to get telescopes for Christmas. So we used to run fairly formal Get to Know Your Telescope events in January, February. We don't do that anymore formally, but we do invite people to bring their telescopes to any one of our other scheduled events. And our scheduled events tend to be things like aurora hunting. So we do that. People are very interested in the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis.
Mm-hmm.
And in this day and age, when we have all these various satellites and telescopes and measuring stations and things like that, you can very easily predict you know, how and when the aurora is going to happen within a few days of it happening. So we teach people about that and the mythology and the religion and the history and the science behind the aurora. And then our other nights tend to be things like astronomy for absolute beginners. So that we touch upon a little bit of everything there, how to stay warm, what kind of telescopes to have, what kind of apps and software to use and so on. And then our nights are split depending on what the phase of the moon is. So for about 2 weeks of each month, you get really nice dark skies because the moon is either not up, or when it is up, it's a very small, thin, kind of waxing or waning crescent moon. And then, obviously, for the other 2 weeks of the month, when the moon is up, it's bright, half full to full. So on those nights, we do generic kind of stargazing and moon what we call it moon watch. One of the things I love to do is to get people to take their mobile phones and turn the camera on, put the lens up to the eyepiece, and try and take a picture of the moon through one of our really powerful telescopes. And that's just a wonderful thing for people to do.
That sounds great. Do visitors have to be confirmed astronomers, or do you attract beginners as well?
Well, in fact, Dan, it's the other way around. So, I mean, I've been now running events there for, coming up to 6 years, five, 6 years. And in that time, we've had very few people who are actual full-on astronomers. It's mostly the general public, people who, like I've said before, have maybe a little bit of an interest. They're curious. They've seen something on the television, you know, Professor Brian Cox or Carl Sagan or whomever. They might have seen something in the news, about, you know, spaceships landing on comets or something, you know, or they might even just be out for it. We get a lot of this up in the northeast here of England. We get a lot of people who just have come up for a weekend away. And in Northumberland, we have a really strong reputation for astronomy experiences. And our dark sky park is one of the largest in Europe. So it is just generally, you know, absolute beginners.
Mm-hmm. Now, you touched on that AstroVentures has a charitable side that helps underprivileged children in inner city schools. So are you exposing these kids to the stars and universe for the first time?
Yeah, that's the plan. That's the idea. I mean, it's in the last couple of years, we've been doing that largely as kind of being involved with other children's groups, like I said before, like the Cubs, the Scouts, and the Girl Guides, and so on. And we are now, we have taken our telescopes into schools as well. So that's been something that we've done. And libraries, actually. Last year, we did a series of events in local libraries, and that was really good. Having kind of children and their families coming in and learning about astronomy, and we would basically get them to build scientific equipment, spectroscopes, out of old CDs and cereal boxes, so they could analyze, you know, starlight and so on. And really, kind of moving forward, what we're hoping to do is try and look for funding and money to kind of get some of these kids up into Northumberland and actually see it for themselves. You know, We've got a festival coming up in, I've got to get this right, in February, like a dark skies festival, because these seem to be quite big things at the minute, where people around the UK in various national parks run week-long festivals to promote dark skies in their parks. And I've taken it upon myself to make my job to try and get as many of these children access to this as possible, you know, in February.
And on the professional side, what's the relationship between AstroVentures and the travel world, like hotels, glamping sites, and other tourism venues?
Well, there's a couple of things. So on the one hand, like I mentioned earlier, we help them with various events and to do with astronomy and stargazing. And that's normally where the hotel or we do places with cottages and shepherd's huts and so on. They basically promote the idea that guests can stay and have a stargazing experience. So we help them deliver that. Me and my team will turn up with a couple of telescopes, depending on how many people there are, some of our equipment as well, and some of our meteorites and so on, binoculars, things like that, and we'll get their guests kind of stargazing. But for me, one of the main things we also do is we try and help them to become dark sky friendly. So, you know, if you're situated in the national park, then there are certain ordinances that you have to try and comply with to keep your lighting kind of dark sky friendly. And a lot of them want to do it anyway because it's, you know, if you can get your lighting to be not uplight but downlit, a certain colour on and off at certain times of day, dimming at night and things like that, then your venue is better for really enjoying those dark skies. And for a lot of people, they don't really know how to access that information quite simply and easily. So we do offer that as a service as well to help them get that advice and get that right.
That's terrific. We're talking with Roy Alexander of AstroVentures.
And you are listening to Travel It Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Mariella Nugent-Lee. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com or catch the archive show on our Facebook page. Roy, how does Astro Tourism help hotels and destinations boost traffic in their off-season when it's usually cold, snowy, and deserted?
That's bang on the money, that question, really, and it is about money, Dan, for these hotels. So typically speaking, unless, in the winter as a holiday maker, you're going skiing somewhere like Scotland or Switzerland or France, generally people in the UK don't really go on holiday or in the winter time. Obviously schools are open, the summer holidays are fantastic for people going abroad and things like that, but in the winter people do nothing really unless, like I said, they're going skiing. So for us, it's about making sure that those hotels can increase their occupancy, their tourism rates throughout the year. And the reason that that's related to astronomy is because, well, it's darker. We get long, cold nights. Right now, where I live in the UK, the sun sets at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, doesn't rise till about 8 o'clock in the morning. So you've got hours and hours of dark sky in which to enjoy, the stars. So I think the last time we checked at the hotel, by having the observatory there and running these events every single night and really focusing on kind of the weekends and the school holidays, they've increased their year-round occupancy to over 80%. And that's quite significant given that a lot of hotels are fairly empty during the winter season.
And didn't Northumberland National Park fund a study that found astrotourism could create about 450 new jobs and millions in increased revenue from visitors?
Yeah, that's right. So, all of the national parks in the UK are kind of really getting on the dark skies bandwagon now. And most of them have some kind of either dark skies officer, like Danny Robertson in Wales, or a tourism officer who does dark sky stuff, like Duncan Wise in Northumberland. Excuse me a second. And last year, Northumberland commissioned a bit of research. It was a questionnaire, it was a survey, really. So they asked questions of people like myself, collated that data. And yeah, somewhere between 400 and 500 brand new jobs. Not all of those are going to be directly related to astronomy. But, if there's an uplift in astrotourism in the season, then you're going to need your waiting staff, your hotel staff, your cleaning staff, your bar staff, and so on, to help with those guests. And I believe the actual figure placed on astrotourism last year just for the national park in the UK, just for Northumberland, was about £25 million of increased profit for the region. And that's excellent.
Whew. Now, Roy, you're on the steering committee of a group trying to relocate a major national science center to the Northeast. Tell us about that, please, and also what it means for you to be an IDA Dark Sky Delegate.
Oh, yeah, okay. So the NASA Challenger Centers around the world are science education centers set up by the Challenger Foundation, which is a not-for-profit body set up by the families of the Challenger disaster that happened in the 80s to promote the educational ideals of Christa McAuliffe and her teaching. She was meant to deliver two lessons from space, so it's kind of centered around that. And Northumberland County Council, we're trying to get it up here. We're trying to kind of build that into the dark sky offering and the great reputation and historical historical history. I can't quite think of the right words. It is 1 o'clock in the morning, though, so that, I think I'm allowed to be a little bit leery with my language. The northeast of England has a strong kind of industry, scientific background going on decades. There's where I live in Gateshead. There's a park nearby that used to be part of a stately home owned by a chap who built a telescope, and it was at the time the biggest refracting telescope on the planet. This is 150 years ago. That telescope actually is still used today in an observatory in Athens in Greece. So things like that, you know, that we've got the shipbuilding up here, that Grubb Parsons that made mirrors for telescopes and lenses. It's a region rich in kind of astronomical heritage. So if we can get that visitor centre up here, if we can make that happen, then it will be like the icing on the cake, I think. And for me, you know, the idea of becoming a dark sky delegate, that's kind of the icing on the cake, if you like, for my experiences over the last 5 years. I've been really kind of pushing astronomy, dark skies, and not just from a stargazing point of view. There's significant evidence now that suggests that artificial light at night, or the wrong kind of light, like blue bright light, you know, and screens and things like that, affects human health. It disrupts your natural sleep rhythms. You know, if we're not sleeping properly, then we're getting stressed, you know, diabetes, heart disease, things like that, incidences are going up. It affects things like conservation and habitats of animals. So, you know, in America, you've got these butterflies called monarch butterflies, and thousands upon thousands of them migrate and fly across America every single year. And farming and commercial lighting and so on is disrupting that and affecting how those butterflies breed and how they live and how they grow. So to be an IDA dark sky delegate means that my passion for dark sky is covering astronomy, human health, you know, carbon, thinking about carbon neutrality when you change lights to LED lights, all of that stuff. It's a real kind of accolade to be able to say I am an RDA dark sky delegate, but also it means that I'm now engaging with other RDA dark sky delegates across the planet, and we're all sharing ideas online about how to improve the local community from a lighting point of view. Because if you think about this, light pollution, right, especially in businesses and schools and places like that, they leave the lights turned on all night long. Would you do that with your taps? Would you turn your bath on right now, tonight, have a bath, and leave the taps running all night long? Would you do that? No, nobody would do that. But we do it with our lights. Why do we do that with our lights? It's crazy. So I'm really keen to get involved in both of those things. And they will link together. You know, dark skies, science centers, things like that, they go hand in hand.
Okay, quickly running out of time here, so just time for one or two more questions. Roy, how much do you travel, and is your travel always connected with Astro Ventures or Astro Tourism?
I have a small family, so traveling that we do tends to be fairly local and regional, and I don't really, you know, it's based around holidays and things for them. And at the minute, we don't really travel from the point of view of doing astrotourism, because dragging children, especially my daughter who's 5, around observatories and places like that, they get bored with it pretty quickly. But we've been to Jodrell Bank in the UK. They enjoyed that. The last actual holiday abroad we had was in France, and we deliberately picked a very rural house to stay in. You know, we are mindful of the sky and of astronomy when we do.
I've got to move on. Got to move on because I will hang up on us. Our guest tonight has been Roy Alexander, founder and director of Astro Ventures, director of learning at Battlestead's Dark Sky Observatory, and delegate to the International Dark Sky Association. Thank you for staying up late and calling in from England to Travel It Radio.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Marianne. And hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Yes.
Thank you. And that's it for this edition and this season of Travel It Radio. Next year, same time, same station, same writers, same announcers, same out-of-this-world theme, we'll return in 2021 with other great guests. Watch our Facebook page for announcements. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg along with Mariella Nugent-Lee saying thank you for your time this time. Till next time, happy Thanksgiving, happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year. Good night and stay safe.